You're listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What happens when teenagers become parents? It's a question that comes up often in Texas, which has the highest teen birth rate and the highest rate of multiple pregnancies in the United States, a country where, by some estimates, one-third of women become pregnant at some point during their teen years. Teenage pregnancy puts entire families at risk for poverty, lower academic achievement, and even greater rates of incarceration for the grown sons of teenage mothers. So why does it happen so often, and how are young families coping with unintended pregnancy? Reporter Sujatha Dan produced this story for KERA.
Seventeen-year-old Leslie is still in love with her baby's father.
They say first love, you can never forget first love. And I guess he was my first love.
Leslie is talking about 18-year-old Sergio, an athletic senior at Louisville High School. As he walks down the hall, shoulders hunched, he looks like he's carrying the weight of the world.
Never thought she would end up pregnant ever. To me, it wasn't really a serious relationship. I don't know how she feels and felt about that. But other than that, it was just another girlfriend to me.
3 years ago, Sergio asked Leslie out on a date. She refused, but he kept asking. And the persistence paid off. She finally said yes.
When we were dating, it was... At first, I never thought it would be all that serious. Like, I thought maybe all 2 weeks and then we'll break up and that's it. But no. The first time, you know, it happened, we had been together for like 2 months and we didn't use protection.
This was Leslie's first sexual relationship. She was 15. Sergio was more experienced, but he could barely articulate why he didn't consistently use a condom.
I don't know. I mean, I guess everybody says, oh, it doesn't feel the same. I mean, we probably used one twice, but never thought she'd end up pregnant ever. I don't know. I mean, she never asked me, you know, oh, let's use a condom. She would just be like, oh, are we going to use one? It was just weird.
They had been dating about 3 months when Leslie found out she was expecting. The memory of that day still affects her. She puts her head down and looks to the floor.
Well, I started crying when they told me the test came out positive. I was disappointed on myself because my mom expected more from me. She gave me this lecture about how I ruined my life and how my dreams were not going to come true anymore, about me going to college. She just was making me feel worse than what I was already feeling.
My mom, I remember that day she started crying, told me I was dumb and all that. But, I mean, after a while, they kind of got over it. And my dad was like, you know, whatever you need, I'll help you. You know, just don't drop out. If you need money, just let me know. My mom was the same way.
Leslie and Sergio broke up when she was 5 months pregnant. The relationship has been strained. After fighting in court for visitation rights, Sergio pays child support to be able to see his baby once a week and every other weekend.
It's stressful, yeah, because that's all pretty much I think about is, you know, the baby not being with the baby mama. It's weird knowing you have a kid, but she's not there with you.
Leslie doesn't see the baby much either. She drops her off at daycare before she goes to school, and sees her when she returns from her full-time job at McDonald's. Typically, that's around 9 or 10 at night.
Well, I was all week thinking about her and how I'm not spending enough time with her. I was kind of sad all week, but I know I'm doing something good for her because I need the money for her. I need to provide her with everything she needs.
Just a few months ago, Leslie considered dropping out of school, but her guidance counselor talked her out of it.
Okay, I'm doing the right thing, but I still want to see my baby.
quieres su juguete.
That piece was produced by filmmaker Sujatha Dan. She is currently working on a multimedia project called Boyfriends that will examine how adolescent girls form and maintain relationships and how those early experiences can have lifelong repercussions. The documentary will air next fall on KERA, and Sujatha has also produced a series of online reports focusing on teen pregnancy that you can find at kera.org/boyfriends. Sujatha, welcome to Think.
Hi, Chris.
Besides the obvious, what puts teenagers at risk for getting pregnant?
You know, I think it's what you would probably guess that it is. I mean, you have girls who tend to not see or have a future for themselves. They look at their lives and they are tending to focus on kind of the immediate gratifications of what sex and relationships can offer them. And what has, you know, I've spoken with dozens of girls, and it's been interesting to find that many of the ones that that are sexually active but have, you know, desires to go to college or see themselves, you know, in careers, tend to be much more, adamant about using protection.
Does the age of a first sexual encounter have any correlation to the likelihood that a girl will be pregnant?
You know, that's hard to kind of talk about because I think I've talked to girls that have been as young as 13, 14, and 15 starting to have sex or having sex and are very aware of protection, are very aware of how this can impact their lives. And then I've talked to others that can be 19 years old and are in college and find themselves pregnant because they just didn't use, you know, protection.
What is sex education like in junior highs and high schools now? Were these kids exposed to this information?
Well, I think, you know, I'm going to go back a little bit and talk about, you know, Texas does have the highest rate of teen pregnancy and that those rates have nationally, the numbers have gone down in the last like 10 or 15 years. And so the debate is all about sex education in schools versus abstinence only kind of programs in schools. And I have to say that, you know, most of the experts I've talked to, one side will say, oh, you know, it's all about the fact that we're not having sexual education in school. And that's why we're seeing teen pregnancy rates at this high of a level. And then the abstinence-only program, people will say, well, we've instituted these programs and they're working and they've been effective. And that's why we've seen such a decline. And the reality is that, you know, the 90s and you know, the years of 2000 have been, generally speaking, good years economically. You've had the advent of the internet. More kids are exposed to information. More kids are going to college. So that's been kind of where the trends have been in terms of decreasing the teen pregnancy rates. But that being said, I mean, I think what you are seeing in schools are predominantly abstinence-only, especially in Texas, abstinence-only programs. And I actually sat in on one of those programs because I was curious as to what is being talked about in these programs and how effective are they. And, you know, I won't lie, I was a little skeptical when I walked in and sat through. It's actually one of the largest programs instituted in the state of Texas and in the nation. And I was pleasantly surprised. I thought the information was valid. I watched the kids. I talked to kids afterwards. And I thought that they were generally impacted. They walked away learning a lot more about sexually transmitted diseases, about teen pregnancy, about the emotional effects of having sex at an early age. But when I talked to the person who was kind of organizing the program, I said, I think what you're doing is seems to be very effective, but is it really likely that these teenagers who are in 8th and 9th grade or sometimes in 10th grade, so you're talking about 14, 15, 16-year-olds, going to wait until they are married to have sex when the average age in Texas of getting married is 26 or 27.
So the emphasis in abstinence only is wait till you're married, not wait till you are an adult.
Correct. It was, you know, the sponsor said, no, this is exactly how we're going to play this. We are not going to talk about, it's too much of a gray line. But I'm not sure, the kids that walked out of this program in this group that I saw, it was actually in a rural school district. And they were like, oh, yeah, we're going to wait, you know, in the immediate moment. That's what they said. I don't know where they're going to be in about a year and a half. Will they really remember this one-day program that they experienced, you know, in the course of, you know, a school year?
Well, and remembering it is one thing, and then there's the overwhelming emotion when you're, you know, a certain age and you've just fallen in love for the first time. How aware are the people who are doing abstinence education of that tendency of kids to stop worrying about the risks and sometimes there's alcohol involved and to sort of let all that fly out the window?
Well, and, you know, I think that the program is not just focused on sex. It is focused on healthy relationships and when do you realize that something is moving too quickly for you and when are you finding yourself in a situation that make you more apt to do something that you weren't prepared for or... And those kinds of situations. I mean, and there's also a lot of discussion about protection and how, you know, there's nothing that's 100%. So while you may be considering this, you should still be aware of the effects of, you know, of having sex and potentially getting pregnant.
Were any of the teenage parents that you met, particularly religious people, a lot of time, you know, there's no major religion that really condones sex before marriage, particularly among very young people. Were any of them religious?
You know, Sergio and Leslie were probably a couple that came from very Catholic, both came from very Catholic families. And so the discussion was interesting when I brought that up because, you know, the question always comes up was what made you decide that you were going to have this child and, you know, we would never consider terminating this pregnancy. But then it's followed up by, but were you considerate at all about considering at all that you were kind of breaking a tenet of your religion by choosing to have sex before marriage? And that one is always a little bit more,
lesser of two evils.
Yeah. It's one of those that kind of gets overlooked. But you know, I think religion plays a role in the aftermath. You know, I don't necessarily
how
you deal with it. I don't necessarily know. I know that the parents in this situation were incredibly upset and didn't know how to deal with it, but then came around for religious reasons.
Did any of the teenagers that you profiled seriously consider terminating their pregnancies?
No, actually, none of the teenagers that I've talked to wanted to have an abortion. Every single parent, except for Leslie's mother, suggested it.
Mm-hmm.
And the teenager felt like, no, this was actually an opportunity for me to get my life together and do the right thing by, you know, my child.
We'll hear some more of your reports over the course of this hour. I'm wondering, though, if any of these young people worried at all about the stigma of being a teenage parent.
Yeah, that question's come up to me quite frequently. A lot of people have asked me or have said that they feel like the stigma of teen pregnancy doesn't exist anymore. And I will disagree after talking to every single one of the teenagers I profiled for the pieces, as well as just many teenage girls who were kind of dealing with this issue. And you know, there's a reason why more than half of teenagers that are pregnant drop out of school. You know, walking down the school hall was miserable. We're going to hear from Liliana, and she talked to me about it. I don't think it's in the story, but how when she would go to school and she was the only girl that was pregnant in her class and how it was just this terrible experience, but how she had to learn to kind of keep her head up high. And she did receive sympathy from teachers and some counselors, but she also, one of the counselors I spoke with at another school that has a teen pregnancy program, talked about how she had to go in and educate counselors and stuff because a lot of those counselors and experts were not very kind to pregnant teens.
We will hear directly from Liliana in another recorded piece just after this break. Sujatha Dand is with us. She's a filmmaker for KERA, working this year on a multimedia project examining how adolescent girls form relationships. We are speaking specifically today about teenage pregnancy in Texas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-983-5377.
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
Or send an email to think@kera.org. You're
You're listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd.
Why are you screaming?
3-year-old Anna Lee really wants another cup of juice.
You had a cup of juice already, Anna Lee.
And her 18-year-old mother, Liliana, is not going to cave.
You can have water. You want water? Stop crying.
She has to stay in charge.
And no more complaining.
Besides Anna Lee, Liliana has 15-month-old Jacob. And they all share a room in her boyfriend's parents' home.
I don't have time to do anything. I know a lot of people are with the MySpace stuff. And sometimes I feel left out because I don't have a MySpace. I tell my mom, I'm like, Mom, I don't even have a MySpace for myself. How am I going to have a MySpace on the computer?
When Liliana was young, her mother left her with her grandparents in a small town in East Texas. When she was 12, her mother returned and moved her to Dallas.
I just grew up really fast when I got over here because it was a really fast transformation from being this 12-year-old girl playing with Barbies to like being 13 wearing makeup and stuff here in Dallas, you know. And it was hard. I told them, you know, I don't want to be here, but they didn't listen. So
she started dating almost immediately and having sex.
My friends were doing it, everybody was doing it. And I was like, you know, I want to be in. I want to be like my friends. So no, it wasn't forced on me at all. It was my decision.
She met her current boyfriend at a gas station. She was 13. He was 25.
I lied to him and I told him I was 18. So, and I played it out really well because I've always looked older, you know.
Liliana says he finally learned her real age a year or two ago.
He was like, what? Like, sorry. There's nothing I can, you know, really do. And I was like, you know, it's up to you if you, you know, want to stay with me or not. I mean, I know it's scary because I know a lot of people, like, first thing they say is like, oh, he's too old for you, or, you know, it's against the law. And it's always about the law to some people. But not to me. And I really like that he's older because he's just so much mature and he takes care of us, basically.
But the relationship hasn't always been so stable. They broke up early on, and Liliana had sex with another guy and got pregnant.
I just didn't care. I didn't care what happened anymore. Like, I just didn't care about myself. I didn't care about anything. So when I was, you know, having sex, I was like, whatever.
After Liliana got pregnant, she said her life changed. She quit seeing Anna Lee's biological father and focused on school. But after the baby was born, she fell behind in her classes and eventually dropped out of the Talented and Gifted program in Dallas. Soon after, she got back together with her boyfriend.
It was like we had started all over again, which was really fun also because it was just, I saw him so much different and, you know, he would see me different. It wasn't like this crazy girl going off and doing all this crazy stuff. We would like just go out and have a nice dinner with my daughter and stuff, which was cool. It really surprised me. So I like kind of knew, I was like, you know, he's the one I gotta stay with because he's accepting my child and, you know, still loving me with my daughter, which was really nice.
When Anna Lee was 7 months old, Liliana moved out of her mother's house to live with her boyfriend's family. She hadn't planned on having another child, but they weren't using protection.
I don't know. It was just something that I never really thought about. Because, you know, we'd been having relationships for so long, and I just never came out pregnant. And then when I finally made my appointment to go get my birth control pills because I was like, you know what, I don't think we should be doing this anymore. I like went in and they like took a pregnancy test and it came out positive. I was like, man, when I try to come get my birth control, you know, it happened.
I want Liliana recently quit her part-time job so she can concentrate on studying to get her GED.
I really want to finish school and then, you know, go on from there, just take it a step at a time. It's all about the kids to us. It's like, I don't stand in line for the clubs. I stand in line for Chuck E. Cheese.
When we eat, when we're going to play?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Is that a deal?
Yeah.
That was another piece by filmmaker Sujatha Dand for KERA. She's working on a year-long multimedia project called Boyfriends. It examines how the first sexual relationships of adolescent girls can affect the rest of their lives. Today, we are talking about the issue of teenage pregnancy, which has come up several times in the reporting of this project. If you want to join us, you can call 1-800...
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
Think@kera.org. Sujatha, it seems to be a theme in these pieces that we have younger girls with older guys. Is that a risk? Should mothers of sons and daughters be concerned about an age split with their child's boyfriend or girlfriend?
It's definitely a percentage that is much higher among teen moms in particular. And so you do tend to see younger girls with older boys. And I think the next story we're going to hear from one of the girls actually is in her 20s and kind of looks back on being a teen mom and was with an older guy and talks about how there tends to be a lack of a father figure in their life. With Liliana in particular, her parents split up. She has very little contact with her father. And then she also is her mother, who is still in her life and the child's grandmother, really likes her in this relationship with her boyfriend because she sees this man, quote unquote, taking care of her. He handles the financial part of things. He contributes to, you know, obviously the children are staying in his family's home, but he's paying for the food and the clothing and the gifts and all of that. So there's also this part of Liliana's world that other people, including her own family members, are very supportive of the fact that she's in this relationship with an older man.
You know, that couple notwithstanding, it is interesting. It strikes me that there's a huge double standard. A lot of families will try and stop their younger teenage girl from dating an older guy. You don't hear very often about the parents of guys in their late teens or early 20s saying, don't date that younger girl.
Yeah, I really, it's actually kind of, most of the teens that I followed are in relationships with someone in their age bracket. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's because it's a male thing. There's been less guidance. Leslie and Serio were actually an anomaly too. Serio's sister, older sister, and parents had talked to him about protection, had talked to him about the kind of girls that they thought he should date and that kind of thing. But certainly with Liliana's boyfriend, there was no discussion from her boyfriend's family about the kind of girl or the age of the girl that he should be seeing. And he said he actually looks very young for his age, you know, in kind of, I don't, not necessarily in his defense, but just in terms of like if you were to see them on the street, you wouldn't think that there was a 10 or 15 year age difference between these two people.
I read a really disturbing statistic about teenage boys. More than half, this comes from a CNN study, 54% of teenage boys said they had never considered what would happen to their lives if they became fathers. That's extraordinary.
Yeah, and there's a program out in Louisville ISD that's a parenting program for teen parents, and it's very different. Typically, you hear programs for teen moms, you don't hear things for teen dads, and about a quarter of the students in the program are men, but still, it's only about 25%. So, you don't hear many of the fathers stepping up to the plate. Although I have to say, I am following this this couple. They are being profiled for the television documentary. And it's just like, I guess, when girls don't see a future for themselves. In this couple and many people in this family situation. The boy was the one that actually really wanted his girlfriend to get pregnant. And I've started to see a lot of that. And partly, I think it's because the girl may say, I feel like I have a future. I want to be an attorney. I want to go on with my life. And in many of these situations, especially among my low-income families that I'm following, the boy is the one that is that doesn't really see a future for himself and is involved potentially with, you know, his boys and in maybe in gangs or with drugs or that kind of thing. And having a child gives him the excuse of saying, I don't really need to partake in that because now I have a responsibility. In the case that I'm following, the boy's older brother got his girlfriend pregnant first. And the mother of both of the boys told me that her younger son, the one we're following, was jealous of that. He wanted to have a child as well because he saw that as a way to bring stability to his life.
What did you hear from the kids that you profiled about the impact of media examples on their personal situations?
I thought it's actually really funny. I've asked that question numerous times in groups, among teenage girls, among teenage girls and boys. They laugh. They're like, that really didn't play a role in it. But what I do have to say, there's a group, Planned Parenthood has a group of teenagers that go to schools and act out different scenarios of, you know, what could happen in teenage sexual relationships in terms of date rape or teen pregnancy and that kind of thing. And they had this activity where each of the kids was, as a group, was asked, you know, what does the media tell you about sex? And the collective answer was that there are no consequences to sex. And then what do your parents tell you about sex? And the collective answer was not much, you know. And what do schools tell you about sex? And it was that, you know, that sex is bad. And what does religion tell you about sex? And so, but what they did was is they had all of these kids get up and each of them kind of represented one point of view. And then they had them all express that point of view together, and you couldn't understand what any of them were saying. And I think that that's what kids face. It's there's a million different things coming at them. And ultimately, it comes down to who they are as people and what they see as their future, you know, and so frequently, they're just, I guess, barraged with so many messages that I'm not sure that they can really say that, you know, Jono played a role in me deciding to have sex or not.
We have an email from Carolyn who asks, have there been any studies on how kids of teen mothers fared who are not economically disadvantaged? For example, how many of the ensuing problems are due to having a teen mom as distinguished from having inadequate financial support?
Yeah, I think that's a question about, let me start this with what the research does say. There's been a lot of research recently comparing what it's like to be a teen mom who comes from a low-income family as compared to what it's like to just be a teenager who comes from a low-income family and seeing where and what their financial situation is by the time they're like 35 years old. And interestingly, the teen mom is much more apt to kind of have her life together, much more apt to have a job, be contributing to the tax base than a woman who came from a poor home, a low income home. So the question is it really teen pregnancy that's impacting the family, or is it really poverty that's impacting the family? But there, you know, the research is actually kind of sketchy about women who are in middle and upper income families. And I think partly because you tend to see parents step into the role, the parents of the teen mom step into the role of kind of taking care of the main issues.
So they're doing both generations.
Yes.
Essentially. Mm-hmm. Let's speak to Shelby in Frisco. Hi, Shelby.
Yes.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I am a young mom. I'm 17, and I was just calling in comments with poverty and just basically everything that's kind of been going on.
Okay.
Like what you're talking about. I live in Frisco. I come from a very good home. Both of my parents and his parents, they both make, you know, good money, and we both have great opportunities. There are a lot of stereotypes, and I think a lot of the reasons why people do get in the position to, you know, have babies young and have sex is just because, you know, they believe they're in love, they're unsure of their future, and they don't know what it's like, really.
So, Shelby, you're 17. What's the situation for you in terms of education now?
I have recently graduated high school. I graduated a semester early. I was home school, and I stayed home with my daughter. And then I am starting college January 20th, so I'm going to school to be a nurse, actually.
Well, good for you. And do you think if you could have chosen the time you had your daughter, would you have waited 10 years, or do you think this is the right time?
Oh, I would have more than waited 10 years, yes, because I find myself, you know, often very stressed out, and really, you know, I try to provide the best life for her possible, but it is, you know, it is a struggle. It's a struggle. The dad is definitely involved. He's a great guy, and, you know, we're both doing the best that we can, but, you know, at times we find ourselves, you know, nearly pulling our hair out because it's just a lot to take on.
Well, you sound like you're doing the best you possibly can, and I certainly wish you luck, Shelby. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
You know, I think about these young women. I'm 38, and it's not easy every day with an education and a spouse and everything else in line. It is extraordinary that some of these parents really do succeed with their children.
Yeah, I think by and large, I think a lot of them do or are trying to do the best they can.
Mm-hmm. Sujatha Dand is with us. We are talking about teenage pregnancy as part of a multimedia project she's doing throughout the year about how the earliest relationships, sexual relationships of adolescent girls can affect the rest of their lives. We'll return to the conversation in a moment and hear one more of those reports. If you want to get on the line to join us, you can send an email to think@kera.org or you can call 1-800.
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
I'm Chris Boyd. You're listening to an archive edition of Think.
First, I just get in here, and I step on this, and I get this branch that I put my
5-year-old Hunter likes to climb trees.
Get that branch. Ow! What was that? Then I put my feet on that branch.
He's a hilarious kid. He's just full of spunk and personality. He starts kindergarten this year.
Oh. But you gotta be careful from the little branches.
Okay, we're gonna go eat.
Carly Allen just got home from work. Dressed in a conservative blouse and a pencil black skirt, she's very matter-of-fact as she talks about her life.
That was a good cartwheel.
She was just about Hunter's age when her parents divorced and her father dropped out of her world.
I think I definitely dated older guys simply because they tended to approach me more. Obviously, now I see that older guys approaching a much younger girl often, you know, are targeting that age range, you know, young girl, naive. But yeah, I did date a lot of older guys, and maybe that was part of the comfort thing, you know, looking for that father figure, looking for that male comfort and reassurance and guidance.
Her mother raised her and her sister alone in a middle-class home in East Dallas. Carly's bright blue eyes dim when she talks about when things changed. Her mother was in a major car accident, lost her job, fell into debt, and moved her family in with Carly's grandmother. It was around the same time that Carly says her friend's much older brother pressured her into having sex. She was 12 when she lost her virginity.
You know, I knew I wasn't ready for that. And then afterwards, it kind of just felt like, well, it's already over. You know, I'm already not a virgin anymore. I'm already broken or whatever. So it kind of just felt like it didn't matter anymore. Or that's all that guys really wanted. You know, that's the only reason guys would really like me.
She met Hunter's father at a gas station when she was 14. He told her he was sterile, so they weren't using protection.
He was 21, I think. He was on drugs when I met him. I didn't know that at the time, but later I found out after talking to him. I knew better than that. You know, I had the common sense to use it, and I didn't. I think almost subconsciously wanting to get pregnant or not caring if it happened, not really seeing any other future path.
Shortly after she told Hunter's father she was pregnant, they lost touch. Her mother wanted her to have an abortion or give up the baby for adoption. Carly says she couldn't do either.
you know, I have a lot of compassion for my younger self. At that time, I was very angry at myself and very ashamed of myself. And now looking back, I kind of can see how I ended up in those situations and just where those feelings came from and how I ended up meeting my son's father and how I ended up even giving him the time of day when now, you know, my older self with more common sense and self-respect would have, you know, blown him off, you know, the moment I saw him.
After having Hunter, Carly enrolled in a dropout prevention program and graduated early. Now she works full-time and takes college classes at night.
You know the Kung Fu Panda and when he did that rocket thing and he did...
I won't say I've ever wished that he wasn't born because I can't even imagine where I would be, you know, during the path that I was on at that time. You know, I think he really saved my life in a lot of ways. But I've thought about it, you know, well, if I could go to college and just be free and young, but at the same time, the knowledge that I've gained from this path that I've chosen, I think has been just precious to me. I wouldn't be the same person if I didn't have it.
One more report by filmmaker Sujatha Dand, who is working on a year-long series called Boyfriends about how girls' first sexual relationships can affect the rest of their lives. Today, we are focusing on the issue of teen pregnancy, but the series that she's working on and, of course, the Ultimate TV documentary goes much farther than that. You can find more about it at kera.org/boyfriends. The issue of adoption as an option came up there. I'm wondering, we don't hear nearly as much anymore about girls who become unintentionally pregnant, giving their children to other families to adopt.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact statistics, but I want to say of teenage girls who become pregnant, about a quarter decide to have an abortion. Less than 3% decide to give that baby up for adoption.
Why has that changed?
You know, every girl that I've talked to that has had a child has said that the child has helped bring their life together, has added structure to their life, has added something for them to, you know, a reason for them to kind of go on, a reason for them to get their lives together. So, you know, and a lot of them talk about spiritual bonds and clearly there was something missing in their worlds. In many cases, that made them decide that this is something that I really wanted to take care of. But beyond that, you know, I don't know. I don't know if there's a bigger explanation for why girls are not choosing adoption.
It seems like universally you have a child and your life changes, and that's sort of your primary function is to care for that child. I'm wondering, though, if you saw evidence of any sort of magical thinking on the part of these young people, other than they seem to all have engaged in magical thinking about the potential that they could get pregnant.
In terms of, like, what their life was like after they had a child, like, in, that they visualized themselves married and very happy with.
Well, I wonder if you felt like they were completely accurate in assessing the state of their own lives.
No, that is many, many girls that I talked to that that dealt with pregnancy didn't even tell anybody. They were in complete denial. And typically somebody in their lives kind of stepped in and said, whether it was a grandparent, a parent, a boyfriend that said, I think you're pregnant. I know you're pregnant. And that was kind of the reality moment for the girl where she said, yes, I'm pregnant. But until then, I had a girl that was in college that I talked to that said that she had in her mind the plan that she wasn't going to let anybody know and she would pretend that she wasn't pregnant. And when it happened, she would just deliver the baby in a bathroom as she saw it and then go from there, you know. And she's now the mother of a 5-year-old child. And, you know, so it's amazing how they just want to put it out of their mind, put it out of sight, and not deal with it.
Let's go next to Jessica in Fort Worth. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. I'm a former high school teacher in Fort Worth, and the school where I taught was predominantly Hispanic and low-income. And we had many, many pregnant girls. And I remember in one class, I had 3 pregnant girls in one class. And I found that kind of in a frustrating way that they tended to get a lot of attention. You know, they would get the baby showers and, you know, everybody curious. And I just wondered if that affected, you know, how other girls felt about getting pregnant. And then in the meantime, I also wondered, have you found any success difference between the girls that would go to a school like New Lives in Fort Worth that is oriented toward pregnant girls and girls with children, or that stay in school, because I also found it was almost impossible for them to get to school on time and to keep their absences down. And it just seemed like, you know, the normal school system is not designed to support a person with a child. And it seems really hard for them to succeed in that environment. But on the other hand, you don't want to kick them out and punish them, you know. So, I mean, if it would be considered a punishment. I mean, I'm not really sure. So I was just wondering if your guests had any comments about that.
Yeah, thanks for your call.
Regarding the second question, the state of Texas does provide additional funding for teen parents, and there are programs in many schools. Now, how effective some of those programs are, I think, depends on the quality of the school. In Louisville, for instance, the one program that I kind of sat through and experienced, they have a 70% success rate. That means 70% of their teen parents are staying in school and are graduating. But that being said, I think you're absolutely right. They, in that school district, do an incredible job of following through with the students and making sure that each student kind of has an individual counselor and someone that they can turn to. And when their schedules are really stressful, that they figure out a way for them to continue their classes and continue their education. I've heard anecdotally about the whole idea that, you know, the baby showers in the classrooms and one of my teen moms that I'm following for the television documentary, her mom threw a baby shower for her. I think that those are things that certainly come up. And I think for these teen moms, it's a support structure. But watching their entire kind of life in terms of the 9 months of finding out they were pregnant and dealing with all of those issues, I have yet to see a parent or a family that wasn't incredibly disappointed, a daughter or a teen mom that wasn't shocked and upset by the news. And, so I think sometimes what we see are those moments of like, oh, everyone's getting along, everyone's talking about a baby shower and cute clothes. But I think the realities are still very much there.
Let's go next to Wanda in Dallas. Hello, Wanda.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I'm finally getting a chance to make a statement, actually. I was a teenage pregnant mom about 39 years ago, and unfortunately I was really upset to hear or to know that it's still going on. This is not condoning it. However, what I wanted to say is that I was blessed. I struggled, raised my children. I wound up having three. I was married. I went on to college, and I now have a 39-year-old son who just had his first child, who is 2 years old. So I actually instilled in them not to do the same thing that I did, because it was so very hard. So I hope these people have someone to help them, and also to, you know, just let them know that you can go on with your life. However, it takes a lot to do it, and you have to keep it on your mind every single day. So I am proud to say that my two boys are just now having children, and they're 37 and 39, so it's not a repeat thing. You instilled it in your kids. If you didn't listen and you made the mistake, you do what you have to do to take care of your kids and to finish your education, and also to instill in your kids not to do the same thing that you did.
Wanda, it sounds like you did a great job. Thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I think what's interesting that's happened over the last several decades is that I think back in the 1960s, 70% of teen moms would get married. Today, it's more like 20%. And so you have a lot of teenagers that have kind of a different set of standards for the person that may become the father of their child. And then it's a very different ideal when it comes to the kind of person that they would choose to marry. And so, I think that maybe there is kind of a media cultural aspect to that, the kind of the Sex and the City generation and everything that's great about, being a single woman and being able to kind of have your own career and have your own house and have your own life. But a lot of these kids are growing up in single parent homes, and many of those single parent homes tend not to tend to be low income.
I mean, I guess it's a tough tough row to hoe because you don't want people trapped in relationships that shouldn't work and won't work regardless. But it's not easy to do it by themselves.
Yeah. And I think so frequently when that happens and the relation, the woman decides or the teenage mother decides that she's not going to continue this relationship, the boy somehow gets left out completely unless he decides that he's going to step in and say, I really want to be a part of this. And so,
meaning the child also doesn't have that person as a father.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that because the woman has said, well, I'm going to do it on my own, or the teenage mother has said, I'm going to do it on my own. I want to do this by myself. I don't need you in my world. And while the teenage father may be around or the father may be around for a while, at some point they just tend to disappear.
What do you think parents need to know and to talk to their kids about in order to, if it's possible, keep this from happening?
You know, I read a study just the other day about what teenagers were saying about this, and most of them said they need to just have an open and honest relationship about sex with their parents. And I think in the majority of these stories that we've heard, and the stories that kind of I've followed, there has been a breakdown in communication between the parent and the teen mom and the teen dad in many cases. And so, you know, I think it's really about knowing what's going on in your kids' world beyond just their relationships and their friends, but maybe relating to school, and also knowing about, you know, having some kind of hope and goals for your child so that they know that that there's a future for them, that they have something to work towards. But I have to say, just like what one of your callers said, and particularly in the case of Leslie and Sario, these were two kids that just, you know, got caught up in, I mean, they had parents that were communicating with them and they had, you know, a school system that supported them, but they just caught up in a situation that I think many people find themselves in and found themselves pregnant.
Sujatha Dand is a filmmaker for KERA. She's working on a year-long multimedia project called Boyfriends. You can learn more about it and see some of those reports that she's done already at kera.org/boyfriends. The television documentary will air next fall on KERA TV 13. Sujatha, thanks so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.